You're listening to the Hammershed Podcast. And welcome to the Hammershed Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Gottfried. On this episode, Brett and I talk a little bit more about our training. Brett shares a great exercise that he's been incorporating, and I give a sneak peek of an interview on altitude training. Today's topic is on building a home gym. Brett and I share our perspective on what the essentials are for someone who wants to strength train at home. Before we get into the show, I want to thank our listeners for all the great feedback and support. The best way you can help the show out is to leave us a review on iTunes. To make things easy, I'll leave instructions on how to do that in the show notes. Which brings me to my last point. On this show, our guests and I share with you a lot of great book recommendations, music suggestions, and product recommendations, all of which can be found at the hammershed.com storefront. With all that said, let's get to the show. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome back Brett Hamilton. As always, welcome back to the show, and we're happy to have you on, Brett.
Thanks, Greg. Good to be here.
How's your day going?
So far, so good. Been pretty low-key. I don't actually get into the gym until in the afternoons on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and so I've been up since 6 and doing other work-related things.
Awesome. How's your training going?
It's been a good week so far. I don't know. Mondays are always a hard day for me because coming off the weekend, Sunday, I always feel like I'm a little bit lethargic, but I managed to hit a personal best in my pull-ups yesterday, which was fun.
Awesome.
I want to say it was an 8-rep personal best on that airborne lunge exercise that I was showing you the other day.
Yeah.
Which I haven't been doing them weighted for very long, but still, you know, 8 personal best is a personal best, so I'll take it.
Yeah. So can you briefly describe what that looks like?
Yeah, you got
who don't know what it is.
So, you know, an airborne lunge is essentially a lunging movement. It's kind of like doing a reverse lunge where you'd step backwards into a lunge, except instead of having your foot touch down behind you to provide that stable base, your knee is actually touching on the ground behind you. And so really it's a single leg movement because that back leg isn't doing anything other than just telling you once you've gone down as far as you can go because it hits the floor.
Sure.
And so for me, what I did was I started doing split squats in a split stance position, just kind of going down and up. And then I started doing a Bulgarian split squat or a rear foot elevated split squat. Names kind of interchangeable, I think, but did those for a while and focused on trying to get as much weight on that front leg as possible and trying not to help at all with the rear leg. And after that, I started playing around with just, you know, what does it feel like to take that foot off and use just one leg to do the work. And that's when things got interesting.
Yeah. Difficulty wise, how similar to a pistol squat is this?
Definitely easier than a pistol squat. But I think for athletic purposes, I think that this exercise has better carryover than a pistol squat, purely because it's easier to teach to an athlete. It's easier to master, because you're working within, you know, essentially what would be like a full squat depth, meaning your, you know, the crease of your hip is about even with the top of the knee. You're not going to get much lower than that in an airborne lunge just because your rear knee will hit the floor. You can also weight them a lot easier than a pistol squat and a lot more safely, I think, too, because you're not risking going below that full range of motion like you would in a pistol squat. You know, if you lose your balance or something, you're risking a knee injury. There's a lot less, it feels like there's a lot less risk of injury with this exercise. And to me, honestly, like the feeling I get when I do an airborne lunge is really similar to the feeling I get when I do a back squat, in the sense that I feel the hamstrings, like the really upper kind of insertion area of the hamstring and the glute, like they're super active. In the pistol squat, I feel a lot more quad and glute working and less of the hamstring. Yeah. So I just feel like the airborne lunge is a more effective movement for developing speed, power, and explosion compared to a pistol squat.
Yeah, I think I've seen it around every now and then. Definitely haven't tried it, so it's something that I'm going to have to give a try in the near future.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, it's been an interesting experience because, you know, in our facility, we just don't have the space for a powerlifting platform or Olympic platform. And so, you know, having a bar and squat rack and plates is just not an option. So, you know, kind of have to get creative here.
Yeah, absolutely. So in my training this week, I started eating a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Every few months, I kind of like to take a month and decrease my calories, lean out a little bit. That way my body doesn't get used to the same thing over and over and over.
Right.
And that way I'm usually in a calorie excess too, especially with trying to get as strong as I can. So,
absolutely.
You know, I'm gaining muscle, but I'm going to gain a little bit of fat too. So this is my cleanse. So, this Sunday I started going back to my normal calorie intake and eating a lot more. And, I got a PR in the narrow stance back squat this morning.
How narrow is narrow stance for you?
Well, they're not touching. Probably 8 inches apart.
Okay. So that sounds about like hip width apart, maybe.
I'd say inside hip. I mean, it's 6 inches, but it's pretty narrow compared to my conventional stance.
Right.
And I felt like a rock star this morning. I was full of energy and the weight felt really light, so I was really pleased with that.
That sounds great.
So I don't know if it was my food intake or just this new squat program is definitely helping a lot too.
Yeah. So the squat program you're on right now, are you still doing squats every day?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Still going every day, and I don't know that I'm gonna stop. I'm at 143 days.
Which is a lot.
Yeah. So I might as well go for a year, I guess.
Why not?
And see where that takes me.
No, and this is not like doing the same type of squat every day though. So you're changing it from, you know, any pretty much any squat exercise.
Right. Yeah. I'm doing more back squatting now with this new program, but the first 120 days I had a dozen different variations that I was doing.
Mm-hmm.
So front squats, back squats, narrow stance, wide stance, pause squats,
pause
narrow.
Pause at the bottom.
Pause at the bottom. Long pauses. I did some where I was pausing and trying to stay tight in that bottom position for 3 to 5 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And then working up to heavy singles. So my body never got used to doing the same variation.
Right.
Which I thought was really helpful.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, how did your volume from day to day change, or did it change?
As far as my sets and reps, didn't change at all that first 120 days. So I was
okay.
Going 10-10, 5-5, 3-3, 1-1.
Oh, okay.
And just worked my way up in weight.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, a paused front squat with a narrow stance is going to be a lot less weight than a back squat.
Yeah.
So that's where my volume was changing.
That makes sense.
Yeah. So a new thing I wanted to start talking about is how we're trying to improve ourselves and how we're trying to learn more. And so I think it would be good for us to kind of talk about what we're currently reading.
Absolutely. You want to start off with what you've been?
Sure. I scheduled an interview with somebody that we're going to have on the show in a few weeks. His name is Brendan Scott. He works at a university in Australia, and I'm going to have him on the show because I've been reading a little bit about blood flow restriction training.
Mm-hmm.
And he's done a bunch of studies on that, and he's also been doing some studies with blood flow restriction training at altitude.
Mm, that's interesting.
So I've been reading a bunch
of
his studies. It is a double whammy, and kind of not where you'd normally go. You think high altitude training for endurance athletes, not strength athletes.
Right.
So his work's been interesting, and I've been kind of skimming through that the last few weeks. And then last week, I finally got a copy of Kelly Starrett's Becoming a Supple Leopard.
Great book.
Yeah, I've only honestly made it through the introduction. Been pretty busy this weekend, and but I'm loving it so far, and I really enjoy following his stuff.
Yeah.
He kind of reminds me, you know, of that Dan John type, you know, simple, is smart, and
yeah, anytime you can, you know, wade through the crap and distill it to a digestible, you know, something digestible for an everyday reader who's not necessarily a coach, you know, you're doing it right. I think he does a pretty good job of that with Billy One.
Yeah, he sure does. And it is kind of nice, you know, reading through stuff that's not really heavy on, you know, the technical aspects. Not that I can't get through it, but if you've had a long day at work and you just want to sit down and relax, I don't really want to be reading through a bunch of medical stuff. And so he does a good job of making it easy to understand.
Yeah.
So what about yourself? What have you been reading?
I just finished a book called Mindset, which was written by Carol Dweck, who is or was a professor at Stanford and then Columbia University. And it's just not related to coaching in any way, but it is one of those books that, you know, the content can be applied to pretty much any part of life. But basically the premise is that there are two types of mindsets that a person can have. And one is called the growth mindset and one is the fixed mindset. And a growth-oriented mindset, a person who has that type of approach to life is generally a person who relishes challenge. They like taking on new things, even if it means the possibility that they might fail at it. And if they do fail, they treat it as a learning experience versus something that devalues their self-worth. And then a person with a fixed mindset is the opposite of that. They actually avoid challenges at the possibility of if they fail, then they might look stupid or they might look like they're less of a person, or, you know, they might lose that label of being talented or gifted in one area of their life. And just really opened my eyes to areas of my life where I've held that fixed mindset before, and then other areas where I've had a growth mindset. And I've just I've come to know myself a lot better after having read the book. And I realized that I made some decisions when I was in school that, you know, I avoided taking certain courses purely because I wanted to maintain a level of my GPA. And I was afraid that if I took a course that was, you know, might put that in jeopardy, that I avoided it essentially. And I didn't do it in college. I actually stopped caring about the number in college. And I just, you know, wanted to absorb as much information as I could. But in high school, I was so concerned with getting into a good college that I was willing to, you know, I didn't take my AP physics class as a senior. And I ended up taking an AP statistics class instead, which probably in the long term wasn't any easier. But to me, it was the easier option at the time. And now I look back, I'm like, man, I really wish I'd taken physics because that would have been fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So,
you know, just kind of disappointing to see those decisions that I've made that I could have done better, and I could have treated it more as a learning experience instead of something that might, you know, devalue my self-worth. But, you know, the real thing I've appreciated about the book is that I've been able to start noticing more about the people that I work with on a daily basis. And I feel like I'm being able to help them better, especially when they're dealing with a mental blockage in an area of their life. It could be in the gym, outside the gym, or anything like that. But, you know, I work with a lot of people who their primary goals are weight loss, muscle gain, you know, generally to look better naked in the mirror. And then obviously get stronger, feel good, things like that. And the mental piece is huge with that. And if you're dealing with some blockages, that's certainly going to stunt success and results. And, you know, that's it's an often overlooked piece of training in any area.
Yeah, no, it's really good that, you know, you're stepping outside of the coaching realm and learning more about other aspects of life. When I was training at a commercial gym, that was something that really stood out to me as a skill that I needed to improve on, but it was also a skill that I was using every day. And it's that, you know, counseling skills that you have, you know, you hear everything from everyone. It was an eye opener to me. I never thought in a million years that, you know, some of the things that I heard, I would ever hear from somebody because I was a personal trainer.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So being able to help people outside of the gym while you're in the gym is a really valuable skill. And that makes, you know, for a good coach and trainer.
Yeah, and it's something that I wish everybody could read that book.
Yeah.
Just by how much it's changed my outlook on life in such a short amount of time.
Yeah, I'll make sure to get a link to it in the show notes from you. So that brings us to our main topic for the day. A problem I've run into a lot lately is finding time in a squat rack. Mm. You know, I'm squatting every day, and so I can't save it for the next day. And when the gym's really busy, sometimes I'll be, you know, wandering around looking for things to do. You know, you go on the weekends at like 9 a.m., everyone's at the gym. And so one thing I decided was, you know, I'm going to beat the crowds and I'm just going to start working out at home. So I've made some space in my garage and bought some weights and slowly assembling a home gym. Mm-hmm. So that's the topic for the day. What do we need to do and what kind of considerations do our listeners need to think about when they are building their home gym? So I guess the best way, not the best way, but a way we can approach this is maybe one for the kind of stuff that you normally do, the calisthenics, bodyweight type stuff, mm-hmm. and the kind of stuff that I've been doing lately, so the heavy strength training.
Yep.
Why don't you go first and tell me what maybe a basic home gym for you would look like?
Well, with calisthenics, it's a pretty minimalist approach. Benefit is you don't need a lot of things because your body is generally the machine. And then depending on your level of strength, you know, if you're a fitness beginner, you might not need any weights to start with to be successful and get great results. And, you know, the higher up you go and the more specific your goals become, then you might start needing a few things here and there. I think one thing a home gym could always benefit when having is a decent set of kettlebells. They're a really versatile tool. They don't take up a lot of space. And a lot of times, depending on the storage capacity of a person's garage or shed or something like that, you know, you can always leave a couple of them on the floor and just kind of tuck them away in a corner somewhere until you need them.
So if you're going to recommend people buying kettlebells, mm-hmm. Would you recommend people buying them in pairs, or would you say get a few at different weights?
That's a great question, actually. I think the only time that you need to use weights in pairs is if you're getting into doing things like a double front squat or a double overhead press or any kind of alternating overhead press, anything like that, or, you know, double swings, double cleans with bells. For the really ambitious people, there are those who attempt to do double snatches, but it's not a super common exercise. So basically, it's a really high level thing to use double weights. I was using kettlebells for about three and a half years before I even started playing around with the doubles. And I felt like I was continuing to be successful and get benefits in terms of strength, conditioning, movement capability, without doubles. So obviously depending on a person's budget, and spatial considerations, you might be better off just buying a single weight and then having more variety of weight versus getting pairs of them. So
now, how about selecting a weight? Now, what's a good or do you have any rules of thumb for people when they're, you know, going to buy their first couple kettlebells?
Well, it depends on where the person is coming from. So if we're talking somebody who's just starting out, total fitness beginner, you know, whether they're male or female, you know, maybe a 8, 10, 12, and a 16 kg would probably be more than adequate. And if you were just going for like one or two, for a female, I'd probably start them out like 10 or 12 kg. And then for a male, I'd maybe start them with a 12 or a 16 kg. And with that weight, a person could learn how to do a kettlebell swing. They could learn how to do a Turkish get up with that weight. they could easily learn how to do cleans, overhead presses, things like that. And then once they start progressing and they feel like they're not able to achieve any more gains for strength and they're purely starting to gain endurance beyond a certain point, then you might need to get more weights. But since we're talking more calisthenics versus pure kettlebell workouts, you could get a lot of bang for your buck with just a couple of weights, because once you've worked your way through some basic squatting progressions and then push-ups and rowing progressions and things like that, and you're starting to get to the point where you can do pull-ups, it's easy to use weighted pull-ups with kettlebells. It's very easy to start holding a kettlebell for various types of squatting exercises, things like that. So they go a long way.
Awesome. How about anything else? So you just got your body and a couple kettlebells.
Well, honestly, so far, a couple kettlebells and a pull-up bar. And pull-up bar is pretty nice, because if you don't want to do a permanent fixture in your home, you could easily get a pull-up bar that can mount to a door frame. Although I tend to shy away from those, because if you care about your door frames, they can start to wreck them after a while, depending on how heavy you are. But yeah, I think a really quality pull-up bar is ultimately what a person who's into bodyweight calisthenics would need, because you can essentially do every single exercise under the sun when it comes to body weights until you want to start pulling yourself up onto things. And there's no really replacement for a bar in that case, unless you have some, nice walls or fences around you that are easily accessible. but even then, it's going to be a tricky thing to pull off. So yeah, a pull-up bar. And then the other thing I might encourage people to have is some towels that are handy if they're interested in training their grip strength with body weight exercises. Again, if you don't have the luxury of a bar with plates or heavy, heavy kettlebells, the only true way to train your grip strength is by hanging and having some progressions to train your grip strength, eventually leading to holding onto towels, is a great way of continuing to build grip strength using your own body weight.
Yeah. Now, I was just thinking about this. Have you ever used towels attached to kettlebells to work on grip strength?
Can't say that I have. I've used towels attached to kettlebells to learn how to do a kettlebell swing. It's kind of like a way of correcting a wonky swing if the timing of the hinge is a little bit off in relation to where the bell is. But no, that's not something I've played around with. I could only imagine that would make it really, really hard, though, if you're using a heavy bell.
Right.
That might be something for you to play around with, Greg.
Yeah, I think so.
The thicker the towel, the harder it gets.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's one thing that I do in my farmer's walks. The set of dumbbells that we have at the gym I go to, they have all different diameter handles on the dumbbells. So, I'll go to like the 115s are really big handles, and the 120s are smaller. And I'm like, the 115 is harder to do than the 120s. It's
right.
Really backwards. Or, heaven forbid, one of the dumbbells breaks, and then they buy a replacement single dumbbell, and then the handles are different sizes, and that's really obnoxious.
Yeah, that is true. I experienced the same thing with our kettlebells, actually. We have a couple of pairs that just, for whatever reason, had different diameter handles compared to the others.
Yeah.
Which makes it annoying to switch between them. So for your home gym, what kind of things are you thinking about?
Well, what I've done so far is I went out and I bought a barbell and a bunch of weight plates. Mm-hmm. What I ended up doing was finding someone on Craigslist. There's always someone trying to sell weight equipment on Craigslist. So
that's true.
Some people really think that their stuff's worth a lot. I don't. Most of the time, I think that if you look around long enough, you can usually find weight at 50 cents a pound. Mm-hmm. Most of the people are trying to sell it for like $1 a pound. So that's just something. That's the price point I usually buy at, is 50 cents. Mm-hmm. I ended up getting a 300-pound set with the barbell. I think I paid $115 for it. So that was a steal.
That is a good deal.
Yeah, and then I went and bought some squat stands on Amazon. Mm-hmm. and they're just some cheap rinky-dink squat stands. They're stable enough to hold the 300 pounds.
That's safe.
Mostly safe. You do have to be mindful, and you know, I try to get the stand. They're not connected; they're single stands.
Right.
I try to get them as wide as possible.
Yeah.
And as long as you're careful, they're fine. Mm-hmm. So I've got the barbell, the weight stand. I have a TRX that I like to use for a lot of different movements.
Mm-hmm.
I like using resistance bands. So I use those to attach to the bar, attach to myself. We just had Dave Schmitz on the show, and he talked about, you know, all the stuff he does with the resistance bands. You can do so much of that stuff at home.
Yeah.
Without the need of any equipment. So I think that's a really...
Now that you mentioned that too, I totally forgot to mention that, you know, for calisthenics too, having some kind of suspension trainer, whether it be a TRX, a jungle gym, or, you know, a good set of gymnastics rings, that would absolutely be a must have thing too.
Yeah. Those are, so the barbell and weights, the rack, I think, I mean, if you're doing heavy stuff, you got to have a rack. Otherwise, you know, all you can do is whatever you can clean or get over your head. And so that's usually not as much as I can squat.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't currently have a bench. It's probably something I'll do in the next few months. And I should probably build a platform so I don't kill my garage floor.
Mm.
Right now I'm just using a high density rubber mat, like what you would get at a farm supply store.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not dropping the weight when I'm doing deadlifts or anything. So I just try to be really careful.
Yeah.
And I purchased a 24 kg kettlebell that I use. And that's it for now.
Right. Yeah. And you can get a lot done with that though.
I can get a whole lot done with that. Like I said, I'd like to get a bench because my squat rack has a lower set of supports where I could put the bar on and do bench press.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I don't think that I'll get any dumbbells. That's something that some people really like, and I think in a home gym setting, a set of those adjustable dumbbells might be a good idea.
Yeah,
just for space considerations. Mm-hmm. But that's about it. I think you can get away with not having much equipment, and you can do it for pretty cheap.
Yeah,
especially if it's something that you're going to do full time.
Yeah,
and
for sure.
Not go to a gym. You can definitely take that money that you would put towards a membership and start ticking off a lot of these things in a few months.
So what do you think is a reasonable initial outlay for equipment? You mentioned 50 cents a pound for your plates. You know, how much did you find your squat rack for?
The squat rack I got on Amazon brand new for, I think, $80.
Oh, wow.
So it was really cheap, and I put them in a corner. They don't really take up that much space.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of how I do my gym now is I still park my cars in the garage. So I'll pull the car out, and the squat stands really don't take up that much room in the garage. Maybe, you know, a 2x2 square area on the floor, and because I can stack them on top of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'll get them out. And then I've, you know, got my plates underneath shelves and my bars again in a corner. Yeah. So I'm into the barbells and the squat rack for, you know, $200.
Mm-hmm.
Suspension trainer you can get. How much are those going for now?
We'll see. The jungle gym that we have at our gym is, it tends to go between like $60 and $70 on Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
Seeing it on Perform Better for as much as 99. So it seems to have a range, but under 100, definitely.
Yeah, so under 100, and then you're looking at, you know, maybe a set of 3 to 6 bands you can do for under $100.
Mm-hmm.
You can easily get a gym for under $500, I think, and
yeah,
be able to do just about everything you need to do.
Yeah, I think if you're going for just a body weight style gym, having a pull-up bar and, you know, investing a good quality one that won't fall off your wall after you've mounted it, would be great, but it doesn't need to be anything fancy, that's for sure. And a lot of people can get the arms essentially, and then, you know, find or source their own bar from a local hardware store. A lot of times they can cut the bars for you, and you know, find a surface that you feel like is a good fit for your hand, mm-hmm. or has like a knurling that you like, doesn't feel too rough or anything like that. You might be able to save a few bucks there, and then possibly a mat too. And you know, the types of mats that we have in our facility, you know, I ordered 200 square feet worth of them, and it cost me under $300 for all of it. So, you know, if you're getting, you know, 25, 50 square feet of it just for doing things like handstands or headstands or something like that to get inverted a little bit, take some strain off of the wrist instead of doing it on a concrete surface, you know, that would be a pretty minimal investment too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a home gym doesn't need to be a real expensive thing. And that's something that I always, you know, thought it would be. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, everyone wants to get, you know, like a cable machine, and they've got to get the, you know, bench press, and they've got to get this machine and that machine. And, you know, then they got to get their cardio machine. And mm-hmm. if you really spend some time and think about it, you don't need any of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know where we became so brainwashed to think that we need a lot of equipment to one, get results, period, and then two, to exercise, because you really don't need that much.
No, you don't. I think part of it is boredom. People don't like doing the same thing, yeah. or they like to play with new toys.
Yeah, new toys is definitely something true. I've noticed with a lot of folks. I love Pavel Tatsaline, he loves to say stuff along the lines of variety. You don't need variety. You need results. And his latest book, Simple and Sinister, the whole book broke down two exercises into very great detail. And it was the Turkish get up and the kettlebell swing. And then the program that went along with it is to there's the simple level and then the sinister level. And essentially for guys and gals, if I remember correctly, the simple level was to achieve for a female 10 Turkish get-ups in 10 minutes with a 24 kilogram kettlebell, and then I think it was 200 swings in 10 minutes with the same 24 kilogram kettlebell, and that's single arm swings. And then for guys, it's the same but with a 32 kilogram, and that's the simple level. And, you know, when I first read it, I kind of scoffed at it and thinking like, well, that would be boring to do because you're only working on two exercises. But then you more you read about it, and then they're like basically just saying, just try it. You know, it's like kind of taunting you and like, okay, I tried it. And sure enough, works like a charm. Like you get great at swings and you get great at Turkish get-ups. And, you know, I think that that focus on few versus being mediocre at a mini number of things is what makes you improve so greatly in a program like that.
Mm-hmm.
So it's and it definitely not a unique approach in that sense, but it's an approach that a lot of people don't take anymore, is trying to find mastery with a very few number of exercises.
Right.
And that's something that I've personally appreciated about calisthenics is that, you know, just like you've been doing squatting for 142 days in a row now, every day that I'm in the gym, I'm squatting too. I'm not doing the same type of time, but I'm still doing the same essential movement. And over time, the reps that you do, they just condition the tissues of your body to respond and squat deeper and squat with more stability. And, you know, my body just becomes so much more comfortable doing that movement because I practice it a lot.
Yeah.
You know, versus if I went to a group exercise class where we could be doing something completely different than we did the day before, you know, that lack of practice, that lack of repetition, makes it so that you can do a lot of stuff, but it doesn't mean you're getting better at any of it.
Yeah, that's something that squatting every day has taught me, and something that I've found a lot of value in, and a concept I'd never thought about until squatting every day, which is, you know, strength training and lifting weights is a skill. And we need to practice it.
Yeah, it absolutely is a skill.
So We got the home gym. What about when you travel? Do you take anything with you, or do you even work out when you're out and about, or how do you treat that?
It's a great question. When I travel, I will typically take my Jungle Gym XT suspension trainer with me. And I love that because it's got door mounts built into the device. And so you can just toss it over a door frame and then shut the door on it and it cinches up and then you've got your suspension trainer there. So it works great if I'm trying to do suspended rows or, dips, or, I could even do a kind of a modified chin up with them. So I'll always bring that. And then, the other thing I'll start to do is, I'll start researching, playgrounds actually, because they have bars that I can do pull-ups on or leg raises or anything like that. And they usually have benches, and those are great for doing things like pistol squats. If I want to elevate my working leg and drop below what would be a full range of motion or anything like that. So I like to find stuff that's just, you know, keeps me outside, keeps me active, you know, puts me in a different environment so that it keeps the training feeling fresh.
Yeah, that's a good idea. I'd never even thought about that.
I've found myself actually steering clear of, you know, working out in hotel gyms or things like that. I remember a couple of years ago, my wife and I went on our honeymoon, and which was a year after we actually got married. We went on our real deal honeymoon to Jamaica, and they had such a small little workout facility. And I went in there one day and used the weights, and then I decided, well, this is kind of stupid. It's beautiful outside. I'm just going to work out on the beach, and just kind of found some sand that was packed pretty well because it was wet, and just proceeded there. And it was a lot of fun.
Yeah. So. That's funny. You mentioned crappy hotel gyms. We just went to a Christmas party for my wife's company, and the hotel we were staying at had a really crappy gym. I was, it's early in my squatting every day, and I was really excited to, they got a workout facility. I'll be able to go do my squats. And I walked in and they had two stationary bikes, a 13-inch tube TV, a water dispenser, and a dumbbell rack. And the heaviest dumbbell they had was 25 pounds. And I'm like, oh.
Yeah, I can't do much of that.
So I found myself doing these, like, contorted overhead squats holding two dumbbells in each hand, like a 25 and a 15 in each hand, and trying to do some funky overhead squat, and that was awful. So since then, if we're driving, I take my kettlebell with me. Mm-hmm. I can do quite a bit of stuff with that, and I always take my TRX with me.
Yep.
I just got a bunch of those resistance bands, and we're going to the beach in a couple of weeks. I'm excited to incorporate that with my kettlebell. I think I'll be able to get a ton of stuff done that way.
Yeah, and I think that, the bottom line is that all of these things that we're using are ultimately tools, and that if you don't know how to use the tools, then they pretty much have no value. So I think, a big message for those people who are possibly thinking about a gym in their home or, traveling and using minimal equipment is make sure that you've had some experience being taught how to use these things safely and being able to feel like that you've got enough mastery with them that you're not going to hurt yourself when you're at home or when you're traveling, when you're using these tools. Because in the end, if your goal is to get results and you get hurt, that's not getting results.
Yeah, absolutely.
Education is absolutely important.
Uh-huh. Well, I think that wraps it up. I think we covered a lot of good stuff on building a home gym and things to think about when you're getting your equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any last thing you want to add?
I just think if anybody has any questions about specific equipment details or anything like that, definitely contact Greg or myself via our social media or email addresses.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Yep.
Thanks, everyone, for listening. Be sure to go to hammershed.com and sign up for our monthly giveaway. Each month, we'll be giving away something to one of our listeners. Sign up once and you'll be entered to win all year round. Also, make sure to give us a review on iTunes. It's a great way to support the show. Until next time, train hard, train heavy, and remember, consistency is king.